Well, good morning. Welcome to Emmaus Church. Good to see you. My name is Nathan. Glad you're here. If you're seated over here on my right and there's a basket under your chair, would you pick it up and hand it down the aisle? And if you'd like to fill out a communication card, you're welcome to. We send out an email once a week, just a three things happening this week kind of email. And so that's up to you, but you're welcome to join in on that. Raise your hand if you like a Bible. We'll hand those out, sermon notes, pages. That'll help you follow along. We'll be in Matthew chapter 11 here in just a bit. Today is our third Sunday of this rest series, and it's the third and final Sunday that we'll look at Matthew 11, verses 28 through 30. We're talking about rest right in the middle of the probably one of the busiest times of the year, which is everybody kind of getting back to school. And if you live anywhere near Joyner here in town, it's especially busy. They picked going back to school to resurface the streets near all these schools near our house. So it's fun. It's a good time. Once more, we're going to be in Matthew 11. We have two more weeks on this passage, but we'll look at different passages. Today, I want to spend one more week here in these words from Jesus. Let me read them to you. They'll be on the screen as well. Jesus says, "Come to me, all you who are weary and burdened, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am gentle and humble in heart, and you will find rest for your souls. My yoke is easy and my burden is light." So on week one of this series, we focused on all you who are weary and burdened. And week two, which was last week, we talked about I will give you rest. We talked about this gift of rest that is offered by Christ. A gift, not a reward for good work. Not an achievement proving the effectiveness of your killer time management system. Right? Not an obligation or a rule to keep in order to make, you know, good religious points, but a gift. Rest is a gift. Major paradigm shift for some of us. Today we'll focus on this strange word, this agricultural image or metaphor that Jesus uses, this word yoke. And by the end, we'll return to Jesus' initial invitation or instruction, which is come to me. So we'll begin with yoke, we'll end with come to me, and in between, I want to talk about law and idolatry, I want to talk about humility, I want to talk about companionship and the weight of grace. So I got all kinds of ideas to throw out here this morning, and I hope that we can make sense of it all. First off, what is a yoke? Most of the time when I say yoke, I'm talking about this kind of thing. How do you want your eggs? That's the question in the morning. That's not what Jesus is talking about. Other times I'll say, oh, dude, that dude is yoked. And that's also not what Jesus is talking about. Big muscle man type of term. I'm not really sure where that comes from. It's not what Jesus means. Jesus is using a really common to his day piece of farming technology or equipment. Most of us have some basic understanding of, I think. Basically, a yoke is a two-animal harness. So you can harness one ox to a cart or a plow, or one horse to a cart or a plow, and they can pull that cart or that plow. Even better, you could harness two oxes to that cart or that two horses to that cart, and the two animals pull together. And the thing that keeps those two animals pulling together is a yoke. Imagine if you had one steering wheel for the right front tire and another steering wheel for the left front tire. And you, in order to drive, you had to like turn them exactly the same time, right? That would work, but it wouldn't be great technology. So somebody along the line creates a tie rod or something like that, so that the front wheels turn like exactly the same, right? It makes driving it's a better design. Imagine you have two massive Clydesdale horses, and if you could tie them together, and they could pull together, and they could turn together, man, that's obviously a better option than one Clydesdale horse, and it's obviously a better option than two Clydesdales pulling together but not connected, right, and going their own way. So for thousands of years, people have used this thing called a yoke. At least I feel like they have. We had several of us looking for a yoke this last week to use as a prop, and we couldn't find one. So maybe the day of the yoke is finally gone. I bet a few of you have heard a sermon on this passage where the preacher spent almost the whole time talking about a yoke and how it works. And I've heard so many different explanations of it. But what I'm convinced and concerned that we're still pretty confused about what it is that Jesus is talking about here. And so when he says, take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am gentle and humble of heart, and you will find rest for your souls. For my yoke is easy and my burden is light. So let's see if we can get a little closer to the heart of what Jesus is saying with this yoke metaphor. Four thoughts on this. Here's the first. It's a thought about burden. In this teaching, who is Jesus inviting? Like, who is he talking to? Who's he calling to himself? All who are weary and burdened, right? We think of the things that wear us out in our culture. We think of the things that weigh on our hearts and our minds and stress us out in our culture. And we should. There's some overlap between today and 2,000 years ago. But it's also really important that we identify who Jesus is talking to in his initial context. They may be... So he's concerned about two specific burdens, I think. They might be the same burden, but I think they're experienced really differently by two different groups of people, so I'm going to talk about them as two. One is the burden bending the back of the Jewish people, and that's the burden of the law, meaning all the religious rules that could never be kept with any kind of sustainability. The common Jew was so beat down by their inability to fulfill all of the religious rules that by the time of Jesus, this group of super Jews had emerged almost like Marvel superheroes. And these super Jews were called Pharisees, and they often get a bad rap. But they were, in one sense, like the champions of the common people, like the regular people. The Amharets is the word, the commoners, because they could not possibly keep all the rules, but they thought the super Jews could. And if the super Jews could keep all the rules on behalf of all of the common folks, then like Marvel superheroes, the super Jews could save the world, right? And so in the first century Jewish culture, some of these super Jews, they take on like celebrity status, almost like a modern professional athlete. In fact, even today, if you talk to people in traditional Jewish cultures, they have these things, they look like baseball trading cards. I'm not kidding. And there's on the, it's not Mookie Betts or Aaron Judge, it's the face of a rabbi who is considered to be exceptionally good, maybe even the Messiah. And the idea of carrying around those cards is like, I'm with him. I clearly haven't kept all the rules. I have an inability to keep all of the rules, but I think he can keep all the rules. And so I'm going to place my trust in some ways on him. I want to at least say I'm with him. I probably won't keep all the rules, but he will, and I'm with him. So the Pharisees of Jesus' day had their fans. The reason Pharisees are more generally regarded negatively in non-Jewish circles is because Jesus exposes their rampant hypocrisy. So they may look like superheroes, but they may appear to be doing everything right, but Jesus calls them whitewashed tombs, which is an amazing image of something that's clean and beautiful and neat and tidy on the outside, but on the inside it's full of rot, full of death. This is Jesus's call. This is one of the names that Jesus has for the Pharisees. The truth is, even the super Jews, even the professional rule keepers, this is all they had to do. They have one job, but they could not do it. The religious rules, the hundreds of things you can't do or you must do, they were like a burden on the back of the Jews. So the first burden that Jesus is talking about is the burden of the law, the burden of having to do everything right. And the other burden Jesus speaks to is the burden of sin, which crushes bodies and souls. Any of us who have turned our lives over to idolatry in any way, and then this progression moves. We are interested in something. We become captivated by something. Like maybe it's worshiping power, maybe it's worshiping wealth, maybe it's the pursuit of short-term pleasure. All these things that make big promises but can't really deliver, they take and they do not give. A friend asked for prayer for a family member early this week. And the family member, he said, was just way too young to be facing death. But he was because of decades of drug abuse. And my friend put it just very succinctly. He said this, his sin is killing him. Yeah. And it's sad, and it's common. We idolize something, and then we end up serving that thing, and then somehow, at some point, the places get switched, and now that thing owns us. And sometimes then that thing even kills us. So Jesus is basically speaking to two burdens. There's the burden of doing everything right, and then there's the burden of doing so many wrong things. Both are heavy, both are burdensome. The first thought is the thought about the burden of law and idolatry, which I think are really two sides of the same coin, and that same coin is pride. The prideful person says, I can be perfect. And the prideful person says, I'm gonna do whatever I want. Both are pride. One is the law, one is idolatry. One is the Pharisee, one is the glutton. Both are prideful. So why, if Jesus is talking to people who are already burdened down by the law or by sin or maybe by both, why does Jesus offer as a solution another burden? Why does he use a metaphor that is another thing that you carry on your shoulders? Why does Jesus say, come to me, all you who are weary and burdened, and take my yoke on you? I think this is where we actually get confused. We're coming to the yoke metaphor from a work perspective, from an achievement perspective, from a performance perspective. So we're thinking about all the things we're pulling. We're thinking about all the things that we're carrying. And Jesus says, come to me and take my yoke. And I think we just go, oh, he must have a better way. He must have better technology. He must be doing this more smartly than I am. We're still thinking work. We're still thinking work. But if you read the earliest sermons on this teaching of Jesus, I'm talking about sermons that are recorded in the first and second century of the church. This is absolutely not what they believe Jesus is talking about. So here's a second thought. Jesus is talking about the humility required to submit your life to Jesus. Jesus is talking about genuine humility that is required for anyone to say, Jesus is Lord, meaning Jesus is the master. Jesus is talking about this heart posture that is simply required in order for us to believe that it's no longer about me, it's about him. I'm going to come under your yoke. I'm going to buckle myself in with you. I'm going to harness myself in with Jesus. 100% I'm with Jesus. We're talking about the humility required to be baptized, right? To surrender control. From now on, I go where you go. From now on, Jesus, I walk at your speed. You stop, I stop. You go left, I go left. You turn right, I follow you. It's not that I lose my identity, it's that I find my identity in Christ. I follow Christ. This yoke is an image of active submission to Christ. Active submission. So let me just say what's probably just very obvious. If I'm taking Jesus's yoke upon myself, I need to be like Jesus. What does that mean specifically? Gratefully, Jesus spells it out in this passage. He explicitly states what it means. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me. That's really the core idea of discipleship. A disciple is a learner. And then he gives us two specific things. I am gentle and humble in heart. This word that's translated gentle in the NIV is also translated meek in some of the older translations. And gentleness or meekness is not, I like laying in fields of flowers. It's not, I like playing with puppies. That's not the idea. It's this disposition of spirit in which we accept, that enables us to accept God's dealings with us and God's direction for us as good. And if we're able to accept God's dealings with us, the things he allows us to encounter in life, and God's direction for us as good, if we can accept that as good, then we don't resist anymore, and we don't complain anymore, and we don't argue anymore. Because this is coming from God. So I can submit to this. This is the same word Jesus uses when he says, blessed are the meek, that's the word. Blessed are the meek, for they will inherit the earth. Which makes sense if Jesus is the coming king. Those in submission to him will inherit the earth. And that all happens kind of ironically through meekness, not through power like we might imagine. It's the same word used in Matthew's gospel about Jesus riding into Jerusalem on a donkey at the beginning of Holy Week. Matthew quotes the prophet Zechariah who says, see, your king comes to you gentle and riding on a donkey. So being gentle, like Jesus is gentle, means you trust your life to God, believing that God is good. And if I believe God is good, I'm not going to argue with him. And I'm not going to resist his guidance. And I will be gentle and I will be meek. Challenging. And then he not only says I'm gentle, but I'm humble. And I think we understand that. Humble literally means not very high off the ground. This is street level spirituality, right? This is feet in the dirt. This is local. This is unimpressive in one sense. This is humility. It's the opposite of prideful. That's what humility is. It's the opposite of prideful. So Jesus says, learn from me. Jesus, and this is what's so powerful, Jesus is doing what he asks us to do, right? Jesus is God the Son living in submission to God the Father. He only does what God the Father says. He only says what God the Father tells him to do. He is linked to God the Father, and he is in submission to God the Father. Jesus is modeling gentleness. He's modeling humility. And so I must also be gentle and humble if I am going to submit to Jesus. If I'm going to be yoked with Jesus, then violence and pride won't work, right? Angry and impressed with myself will not work. We'll be all messed up. We'll be yanking in the wrong direction, and I'm not as strong as he am. I will be miserable if I am with Jesus, but I think that my whole life is about me. If I think that my life is about my way, my desires, my preferences, my identity, my success, my fame. That is not going to work if I'm yoked with Jesus. The only way being yoked with Jesus is going to work is if I become Christ-like, right? That's the only way it's going to work. So I must become Christ-like, and I think this is what Jesus is communicating with this yoked image. If I'm going to walk like Jesus walked, I have actually genuinely got to become gentle and humble, because that's his way, according to him himself. So the second thought, first thought's about burden. The second thought this morning is it takes humility to submit to Jesus. And yes, that is super difficult. But a third thought I had this week as I'm reading this is a thought about companionship. And I'll put this in the form of a question. Is there anyone you would rather have as a all-in true companion through every part of life than Jesus? Is there anyone you'd rather have as a companion in your life than Jesus? On one hand, I'm thinking about humility and I'm thinking about submission. I'm thinking, this is really hard. This is really hard. And on the other hand, I'm thinking, companion with Jesus? Like, this is amazing. This is what's offered to me. I can have Jesus as a companion, the true lover of my soul, the one who takes my place, pays for my sin, a companion that is so strong, he conquers death. Like, what do I have to be afraid of if Jesus is my companion? The great shepherd, someone who is good and loves me and will guide me, the great physician, when there is no ailment that he cannot heal in me. The one who walks on water, the one who turns water into wine, right? The one who calms the storm. You're inviting me to be your companion? I would love to say yes to that. It's incredible. What an amazing opportunity. Sometimes it feels to me like life is like jumping out of an airplane, just completely out of control, completely. Sometimes it just feels like a free fall. And it's like Jesus says, yeah, you can do that by yourself if you want. Or we can tandem jump. And I'm like, sign me up. I'd much rather do this with you, right? When I think about the companionship offered to me by Christ, I think, absolutely, yes, please. I want us to use our imaginations about this. And yet I also want to think very literally and very specifically about this. Jesus is inviting us. Jesus, friends, he's inviting you into companionship with him. That's the core. It's not a belief system, not a religion, not even a community or a tradition. at the end of the day, though those are important things. Jesus is inviting you into companionship. What is his invitation? Come to me, right? Come to me. That's his invitation. We're talking about rest. Rest from weariness and burdens. And within this context, it becomes pretty clear that rest is just a byproduct of coming to Jesus. When resting feels impossible because of all the kids and all the responsibilities and all the bills and all the burdens and all the pain and all the frustrations, gratefully, Jesus doesn't give us five steps to rest. Just one. Come to me. Like I can remember one. Come to me. We don't have time for five steps when we're drowning. We don't have time for five steps when we're just can't even look up because the burdens are so heavy. Come to me. Come to me. It's an invitation to companionship. What does this look like? What's a real life image of companionship in the midst of the chaos? Susanna Wesley, the mother of the founder of the Methodist Church, John Wesley, we're talking 1700s, the mother of John's brother, the great hymn writer, Charles Wesley, and the mother, if you can believe this, of 17 other children. And you have to just imagine this because none of you have the capacity, I think, to do anything other than imagine parenting 19 kids. Susanna Wesley would famously sit in her kitchen amidst the chaos and pull her apron up over her face and over her head. And this was Mama's sign that she's praying now, right? This was how she would come to Jesus. Right? There was no getting alone with God. This was getting alone with God. Right? There was no space to go be by yourself. You got 19 kids. There was no taking a break, no mental health days or whatever. In the middle of it all, she would flip her apron up over her face and over her head. And that's how she would come to Jesus. This coming to Jesus is so clearly the key to the rest for your souls that Jesus is talking about. It's coming to Jesus. And I don't want to oversimplify it because I think there's great value in all kinds of other supports, all kinds of other remedies, all kinds of other ways that we can come alongside and encourage and serve people. So I don't want to overly simplify it. I was reading this, the government's now referring to the epidemic of loneliness and isolation in our country. The U.S. Surgeon General released an advisory. It's called The Healing Effects of Social Connection and Community. And I looked up what a Surgeon General's advisory is a public statement that calls the American people's attention to an urgent public health issue, and provides recommendations for how it should be addressed. Advisories are reserved for significant public health challenges that require the nation's immediate awareness and action. This thing's 142 pages long, and it's totally daunting. Let me tell you just two statistics that come out of it. 57% of teenage girls, 57% teenage girls in 2021 report feeling persistently sad or hopeless. And that's up from 36% 10 years ago. So from just over a third of teenage girls, 10 years, just over half, actually significantly over half of teenage girls, persistently sad and hopeless. The number of boys is lower, but the rate of increase is the same. And then one more stat, 30% of teenage girls, according to this advisory, have, quote, seriously considered suicide, 30%, up from 19% 10 years ago. The point of all the stats and studies in this advisory is to say that this is unprecedented levels of loneliness and isolation. Since they've been measuring these kinds of things in our country, they've never marked numbers so high. And while tragic, I think these numbers underline the importance of the core message of the church, which is no matter how bad life gets, you are invited to come to Jesus, right? And you know we are actively involved in all that other support kind of stuff, and there's places for all that other kind of support. But all that other kind of support's going to fall short if we somehow miss at the core of it, at the heartbeat of it, is this beautiful invitation to the lonely teenage girl. You can come to Jesus. Doesn't matter how much money, how many programs you have access to, what the government says, you can come to Jesus. That's the core invitation. So I've shared a thought about burdens, about humility, about companionship. Here's a final thought. What does he mean? What does Jesus mean, my yoke is easy and my burden is light? What is this yoke that we can hoist up onto our shoulders? How much does it weigh? How much will it add? And how can it possibly be light and easy? What is this yoke that Jesus places upon us? Friends, it's grace. That's what it is. It's grace. And that's the brilliant Jesus move here. I mean, this is what he's inviting us to realize. It's the irony of you are all thinking in terms of burden, burden, burden. I'll play along. Here's another burden. It's grace. We don't bear the weight of grace, do we? Grace bears us, right? We don't carry this heavy thing called grace. Grace carries us. Grace carries us. It's not my job to load in some grace. No, grace carries me into my family, into my marriage, into my service of the community. It's not another law. It's not another rule. It's this remarkable love-fueled ability given by God so that we can join with him. Grace is not some heavy load like a rule or an obligation or a burden or a sin. Grace lightens the load. Friends, grace is what takes the load away. Jesus doesn't demand that we take on additional burdens or more weight. He does something very different. He gives us grace. It's just so beautiful. So a quick review of these four thoughts. The burden is pride expressed as legalism by some and licentiousness by others. Two, it takes humility to submit to Jesus. Three, Jesus' invitation is to come out of loneliness. It's to come out of isolation and to come into companionship, specifically with him. He says, come to me. That's the key idea in this passage. Come to me. And four, the burden is light because it's not burdensome. It's grace. And grace bears burdens. So what we've seen in the short passage, I think, is a movement out of pride into submission, which is challenging, and companionship. Let me say that again. Out of pride into submission and companionship, both challenging and beautiful. And it's all about grace. The whole thing's wrapped up in grace. There's a paraphrase of this passage that Eugene Peterson wrote. It's called The Message. In fact, it's a paraphrase. He does the whole Bible. He paraphrases the whole Bible in poetic modern language. And I want to read to you how he articulates the words of Christ in this passage. This is what he says. He has Jesus saying, "Are you tired? Worn out, burned out on religion, come to me. Get away with me and you'll recover your life. I'll show you how to take a real rest. Walk with me. Work with me. Watch how I do it. Learn the unforced rhythms of grace. I won't lay anything heavy or ill-fitting on you. Keep company with me, and you'll learn to live freely and lightly. Friends, may we be yoked with Jesus. May we walk with Jesus. May we joyfully harness ourselves in with Jesus. And may we find rest for our souls. Amen.